Welcome to Grain Talk, a Grain Journal podcast in which we give voice to the issues and events affecting lives and livelihoods in the grain and feed industry. Have an idea for a podcast? Email Grain Journal digital media specialist John Reedy at john@grainnet.com or call 1-800-728-7511. As always, keep up with the latest news at grainnet.com. That's grainnet.com. And be sure to get the latest Grain Talk podcast at podomatic.com, podomatic.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Thank you for listening. Hello and welcome to another edition of Grain Talk Podcast. I'm Grain Journal digital media specialist John Reedy. Today, we'll be spending some time with Ben Farger, the Vice President of Sustainability, Cargill Agricultural Supply Chain North America. Cargill has been among the world's leaders in sustainability and regenerative agriculture, working to mitigate climate change, regenerate soil, and improve water use. Today, we'll be speaking with Ben about Cargill's sustainability efforts, why they're important to the company, and what the future may hold for agricultural producers as we seek to mitigate climate change. Hello, Ben, and thank you for joining Grain Journal's podcast today.
G'day, John. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your ag industry background, and how you came to your current role in Cargill.
Sure thing, John. I'm an Australian and living in Minneapolis currently, so that is certainly a shock to the system in terms of the climate, that's for sure. But I'm a farm boy from central west New South Wales in Australia, and really my only passion in life was agriculture, and so I got involved in the agricultural industry in Australia, various roles from trade to representing farmers in Australia to publicly listed agriculture in Australia, and then worked for Cargill in our grain and oilseed business for about 6 years until I one day was very privileged to have the opportunity to come across the Pacific to the United States with my young family. And I've been living here for 3 years working with Cargill's agricultural supply chain business, not just in the United States, but also we cover Canada and Mexico as well. And certainly been an absolute privilege and pleasure to do so and to learn more about US agriculture and the great people and communities within it. And although I came across the Pacific to work in the commercial customer-facing side of our business, I've recently, John, transitioned to a role full-time in sustainability, one, because our company thinks it's important, but two, because I personally think it's important that we can make a real difference to helping farmers be part of the solution to some of these global challenges. And so that's what I'm currently doing, John.
Yeah, as you mentioned, among human endeavors, agriculture is perhaps the most sensitive to climate, from the seed in the ground throughout the supply chain to the final product that finally gets to a family's table. I don't think it should surprise us then that agricultural companies such as Cargill are among climate leaders where farming and ag are on the front lines. So, Ben, how does Cargill define sustainability?
Yes, look, I think that this issue of sustainability in agriculture is one of the reasons I'm so excited about it, John, and one of the reasons Cargill's so passionate about it is for two reasons. One, it really does go to our purpose as a company, which is about how we lead and nourish the world in a safe, responsible and sustainable way. So it's really part of the Cargill family's and staff's purpose. And obviously, when you're doing something that aligns to your purpose, that's a really good place to be. And the second reason that we're so excited about it, and personally myself also, is because it's one of these issues that is inherently linked to agriculture, and just spending so much of my life working with farmers that themselves, with their purpose, think about how they can pass their greatest asset, their land and their soil, their water resources, onto the next generation, that long-term thinking about the next generation. Sustainability is just so inherent to agriculture. And therefore, when we think about some of these global challenges we have around climate change, water resources, how could we then, as a society or a world, how could we ever address those issues unless you're working with the people that are managing the land? And so you get that intersection between a global challenge and what is fundamental to a grower's view of the world in terms of handing the assets on to the next generation. And that's where we see the contribution we can make helping farmers and our demand customers in those endeavours. And so that's the overarching comment, John. And then into just some more specifics for you, we really define sustainability efforts around five key pillars, and they would be climate change and specific commitments we've got and programs, endeavours we have in that regard, water resources, which is such a big issue. And I know there's a lot of focus on carbon at the moment, rightly so, but water's such a big challenge to us in agriculture as well, of course. Farmer prosperity in general, which goes to us globally when we talk about how we educate, train, support farmers and also around land use, human rights and other aspects of sustainability. So we've got a very, very specific set of commitments in all of those different areas. And at the heart of it, though, as I say, is that we're not going to be able to achieve them unless we really link with growers who are the ones that are managing the assets.
So as growers, tell us about initiatives underway at Cargill to promote sustainable agriculture. What is regenerative agriculture and how are producers in different regions of the world engaged in this effort?
Yeah, look, thanks for that question, John. It's a really, really important question for us, and we have a range of programs underway, and other companies do, of course, as well. And that's what makes it exciting, because individually and then collectively as an industry that is agriculture, we can really move the needle into some of these global challenges. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to stand alongside our grower customers and link them with our demand customers through our unique place in the supply chain to provide them and support them in their own sustainability efforts, many of whom, of course, have not only got initiatives underway, but have had initiatives underway for many, many years and have been leading in that regard. And so we have arrangements in farmers where we work on soil health, where we look at cost-sharing arrangements with farmers as they might undertake practice change around conservation practices or around cover crops or water management. We've got some innovative programs where we actually work with farmers to provide them commercial payment for a water quality outcome or a carbon outcome that we then seek to offer to either local municipalities around water or in-setting arrangements into food customers globally. We've got initiatives where we support NGOs and partnerships in certain states or regions. We're working with agronomy groups on education and around practice change. We're working with economic advisors around the economics of soil health and regenerative agriculture sustainability initiatives to look at the cost of these activities and the cost change and also the revenue change through partial budget analysis, so we can really get to have sensible economic discussions with our grower customers about the impact of some of these practices, what it'll mean to them with and without potential payments for ecosystem services like carbon. And they're different, John, in different geographies because of the nature of the production system, the soil, the crop type, and to be frank, the nature of the different rules or protocols we've got around some of these new emerging markets like carbon as well. They're obviously well developed in some countries, less developed in others, and so we need to be flexible on that regard. So a range of programs as part of a sustainability portfolio. We're putting new programs on the ground all the time. We're working with thousands of customers just in the United States, let alone globally on that. And what we're really trying to do, John, is listen to what's important to our growers and put programs alongside to support them that make sense to them. And some of those things would be considerations like flexibility, and not putting people in a box and recognising that there are different production systems, different soil types, different aspirations and objectives of growers. And so wherever possible, we want to be flexible to meet people where they are. Considerations like the simplicity and the paperwork and the data requirements to get into some of these programs. The way I like to explain it, we don't want to go and sit with growers for days, taking up their precious time with a significant amount of paperwork. We want to make it easy and we want to utilize the data that the grower might have on the terms they're happy to share it to make it easier easy to get into these programs. We want to also make sure that things are like the contract terms, pricing arrangements, and how these programs are put in place are well understood and transparent to growers. And those types of considerations are what feedback we've got from farmers, and that's how we're trying to set up and roll out more and more schemes all the time, John.
And what is that link between sustainable agriculture, which Cargill is pursuing with its growers, and fighting climate change?
Well, we know that agriculture has the ability to just make such a positive contribution to some of these sustainability challenges that the world faces. And the science is very clear about that, whether you're talking about the ability just in carbon, for example, to either abate or reduce emissions through what we're doing in terms of our tillage systems and fertilizer technology on farm, the ability to be able to remove carbon or actually sequester it in the soil. And you think about the soil's potential as a carbon sink. There's been lots of discussion about technology, lots of discussion about forestry, but there's such potential in the soil, and that's inherent to the grower's management of the soil and can help us as a globe really lean into some of these climate challenges we have around carbon. And so that's such an opportunity, not without complexity, absolutely not without complexity. And there's a lot of work still to be done on rules around carbon and carbon markets and the measurement and verification of soil organic carbon, but we are making progress as an industry and respective companies like Cargill, and we're very excited about that. And then, of course, soil management links into so many other benefits around issues like water volume, water quality, water use efficiency, more crop per drop, as we like to say in Australia, and given the nature of the climate there and the variability in dry, scarce water resources that we have in a geography like that. And there's a whole lot of other benefits around rural community engagement as well, and biodiversity. But the fact of the matter is that agriculture's just got the opportunity already, and further still if we can partner with farmers to make a significant contribution. And it's so interesting now that the broader economy and companies outside agriculture are seeing that too. And when you start to think about the commitments that companies have made around greenhouse gas reduction, carbon, net zero, beyond net zero, regenerative agriculture commitments outside our traditional food and CPG supply chains, looking at what's called nature-based solutions, or looking at agriculture as part of the solution. And we want to be part of giving farmers the opportunity to link into that demand, both so they can produce food, which the world needs, and that they can be recognised for the good work they're doing around sustainability, which the world needs. And that's just so exciting.
And so what steps Cargill as a company, what steps is Cargill taking internally to address climate change issues?
Yeah, good question. Thanks, John. Obviously, you know, we have a big contribution and responsibility ourselves, particularly as I mentioned before, because sustainability is such a part of our purpose. And so we have made specific commitments, for example, around our own greenhouse gas emission profile, whether it's within our operations, you know, scope one and two emissions. So we've made a commitment around reducing those emissions by 10% by 2025 off a 2017 baseline. And then there's emissions, what's called scope three emissions, involved with our broader supply chain, and we've got specific commitments there as well, 30% on an intensity or per tonne basis by 2030 off, again, a 2017 baseline. And we've got a whole lot of other specific commitments around water as well, in priority watersheds, whether they be volume or indeed quality targets around water and water stewardship, John. So a range of commitments that we have ourselves that we obviously take extremely seriously, and then providing a solution to our customers, our demand food customers and customers outside our supply chain that have made their own commitments and are seeking agriculture's help to help them meet those commitments. And so linking those two parts of the supply chain up as well. So there's internal commitments and broader contribution because of our place in the supply chain.
And in your place in the supply chain, has Cargill already seen some of the impacts of climate change and that sort of spurred this decision to move forward with some of these programs?
Look, I think we, as part of such a large footprint and globally, face and feel the impact just like the rest of the globe, and in different ways in different parts of the world, about the impact of climate change and climate variability in our production systems. And obviously, it's hard to generalize about exactly what that impact is in different parts of the world, depending on where your production system is, and whether you're in the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere, depending on whether you're involved in dryland or irrigated agriculture, depending on the particular crop and production system you have. But one thing that's clear is that it is a global challenge for us as a company. We want to be part of the solution and make our own contribution, as I mentioned, by our own commitments. But we also want to, because we've got customers at both ends of the supply chain and we can see the potential as others can, we want to link those two things together and make a contribution to making that link. And I keep going back to the point that if we do want to overcome some of these challenges, we just don't see how you could do it without involving agriculture as part of the solution. And I really think that there's been a change in sentiment in some parts of the economy and among some people that look at these things, where once agriculture was seen more as the villain, or some of these issues were more seen from a compliance basis, to an understanding that the more and more people, like I have the pleasure of doing, work with farmers, see that inherently they are seeking themselves to have sustainability at the core of their business. It always has been about managing their asset, not just for today, but for tomorrow. And then if you work with them and provide tools, sensible opportunities to actually get recognised for the work we're doing, like sequestering carbon or abating emissions or working on water quality, and you put good programs that make economic sense, are flexible, are respectful around things like data, then you can make huge headway. And that's what we're seeing. And I'm so pleased that other people are seeing that as well that aren't traditionally in agriculture. Obviously, many people listening today will be, and so they'll inherently understand that. But there are many people outside of agriculture that it has taken some time to come to that understanding. I'm seeing more and more of that understanding develop every day, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think some of that understanding you talk about, maybe initially the first image that comes to mind is smokestacks and carbon. But as Cargill and some other agricultural companies have gotten into the conversation and sort of turned it to, it's not just carbon, but it's soil health and clean water and taking care of all those things. Like you mentioned, agriculture has become part of the solution and less part of the problem. So that sounds like a really great opportunity for Cargill and these other companies to be in that position. And like you said, Cargill was out in front of this and has gotten a good start on it. And all the programs that are available to help producers certainly seem to have taken hold and are leading Cargill toward its goals.
Yeah, we think so, John, and I'm not saying that we still don't have a lot of work to do, either as a company or an industry. Of course, we always will do, and not in any way wanting to be complacent, but at the end of the day, we think that if we've got the right intent based on a purpose to work with our growers, and we're working together as an industry to invest in research and development and technology and to make sure that the rules or the protocols, when you think about carbon markets, are set up to work for agriculture when initially they may not have been set up for agriculture, and therefore they need to evolve when you're talking about soil organic carbon as distinct from technology schemes. There's a lot that an industry, and including governments and regulators, can do to catalyze nascent markets such as the carbon market and not restrict it, to invest, but without crowding out the private sector's involvement. And so if we can get sensible policy settings alongside with industry working together where it makes sense to move the ball, as well as really good programs from individual companies working with their farmers, and build trust and understanding about these issues. And that's so important as well. And I saw a recent work that was done about growers' involvement in some of these programs. And some of the feedback, John, was not about the particular price of carbon that might be offered or a particular contract term, as much as it was about trust and understanding of the end game. And that's one example why we've done some work on the economics of soil health ex carbon programs, to look at what it means for a grower in terms of economic, the economic outcome on farm, the costs and benefits, and being really transparent around that for their own particular enterprise against their own objective. Then you can potentially add ecosystem service payments on top of that, carbon, water, bundling, a combination of both, and really get farms' participation and recognition for the work they're doing. So a lot of work to be done for sure, but certainly as a company we're leaning into it. We're learning a lot. We're taking a lot of feedback from our customers, both demand customers inside and outside our supply chain and our farmer customers. We're passionate about it. And we're really looking forward to continuing to make a contribution, John.
Well, thank you for joining us to discuss Carbell's sustainability initiatives today, Ben. We really appreciate your time. Was there any other topic perhaps we didn't get to earlier, or any other initiatives that might be coming up soon in the future you might want to talk to us about?
Look, John, no, I just appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it, and you can hear my voice. We're passionate about it. We really want to make a difference, and we've got multiple programs on the ground, as I say, across various states in the United States and around the world, and we're putting more programs on the ground all the time as we learn and take feedback from growers about what's important to them, and as we link more and more and these markets around, say, carbon develop more and more, it gives us the opportunity to put more programs on the ground and also obviously make headway against the importance of meeting our own corporate commitments. And so we have many, many opportunities to engage and more to come. And we look forward to talking to your listeners about it as we go on our journey.
And as far as farmers and growers, if somebody is interested in participating in one of these programs, how would they get in touch with Cargill to do so?
Yes, look, John, they can get in contact with our people, our origination teams and Cargill teams around the country. Another thing that's really important to us is that we want sustainability in these programs to be part of our broader value proposition and discussions we have with growers as we're talking about grain and grain markets and access into our assets and risk management tools. For us, sustainability is not a side project. It's part of the broader value proposition. And so we spend a lot of time internally as well talking to our staff about it. And of course, there's a lot of technical detail when you start to think about carbon markets. And so we've invested ourselves in expertise and building out our team's capability there. And so growers can get in contact with their local cargo rep. We'll be able to give them advice and then through the normal, you know, website and other channels. But certainly our men and women on the ground are really keen to talk about and take feedback from growers about what's important to them, what types of programs they'd like to engage in. And if we either have a program at a particular location now, then that's excellent. And if we don't, but there's an opportunity to in the future, well, we're happy to look at that and take advice on that as well, John.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Ben. We really appreciate it. And we also want to thank our listeners. We at Grain Talk appreciate your time as well. We sure to keep up with the latest grain and feed industry news at grainnet.com, where you can also sign up for FYI Grainy News delivered to your email inbox every Thursday. We're also social. Be sure to follow Grain Journal on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. And until next time, take care.